Hey, this is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition, coming to you with my next podcast with Kristen Rowell. Kristen is a professional trial lawyer, as well as a marathon runner and a professional bodybuilder, competitive bodybuilder. And she's really high energy, high impact, has a lot to say, has a lot to teach us about adversity. Overcoming adversity, and the ketogenic diet. So I'm super excited to have a really powerful alpha woman on the show, and can't wait to let you hear what she has to say. Right on. This is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition, coming to you from the foothills in Denver, Colorado. And we have a super cool guest on today. We have Kristen Rowell, and she is a professional competitive bodybuilder, a big-time lawyer, and a super nutritious fitness guru, that I like to say. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thanks so much, Jeffrey, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Have you ever been called a guru before? A nutrition
I think
guru?
I actually have been called a guru, and I take it as a compliment, so thanks.
Right on. Yeah. So I'm super excited to have you on the show. And like we were talking about before, you're not my typical guest because I'm just looking at the blonde bombshell, and you're not fighting type 2 diabetes, or you're not fighting insulin resistance, but you have a fantastic story, and a lot of it is fighting adversity. And really challenging yourself to be like the best you. And I really love your story, so I wanted to have you on.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And you are correct to say that I don't personally have experience with type 2 diabetes or any diabetes, but I actually grew up in a family. My grandfather had type 1. So he had juvenile diabetes from the age of probably 7, I think. And I watched him give himself insulin shots his whole life. I watched him go through a leg amputation at one point in his 50s. And so I definitely have had experience in my family and understand what some of the complications that people suffer through. So if there's any advice or assistance that I can give that people find helpful, I'm happy to share it. I really am.
That's awesome. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely type 1 and type 2 are definitely diseases that stretch across to almost every single family, especially in America, and especially today.
They do. They do. And, you know, it really has become an epidemic in our country, and I feel pretty strongly about this, and I'm pretty vocal about it, is that I really believe that if people had the information and can arm themselves with the information to understand how to fix it, they would. Unfortunately, in our society, we are so bombarded every day with commercials and advertisements and just societal pressures around food, that I think for the average person, it's like, how do you even know where to start? And so I don't blame people for the circumstances in which they find themselves. I really genuinely mean it when I say I want to help, and I want to help people get the message out there so that they know what to do in order to make changes in their lives. I really think a lot of times people just don't know where to start.
Absolutely. And that's interesting, because that's my next question is, how did you get started in the nutrition fitness world?
Yeah, great question. So I have been one of these people who always has enjoyed exercise my whole life. Now, I wouldn't say that I've you know, really looked forward to it all of the time, but I grew up in a house where my father used to exercise before work. And so I would watch him do that and leave for work to go to his job as a dentist. And I just sort of looked up to him and admired that he was an exerciser. So I thought, well, I see him lifting weights. I want to try that. I want to be like dad. So I started lifting weights in middle school, and that took me into high school. I was never an excellent athlete, but I would play my different sports. I would run track in the spring. I would feel nervous as I'll get out when I had to get on the starting line of a track meet, and sort of proceeded through what I'll call just normal sports as a kid. When I went to college, I was not a collegiate athlete, and I'd say I was someone who would spend some time in the gym, but it wasn't a huge part of my identity like it is now. And really, when it got more intense for me is when I went to law school, I thought, I have got to have some kind of an outlet for the stress of this work and this homework and the studying, because otherwise it could be all consuming. So during my first semester of law school in the year 2000, I trained for and ran my first marathon. And that was in 2000. And I kind of set it on the bucket list to say, I'm going to run one and then I'm going to be done with it. And I got addicted to it. And I've run one or two a year pretty much ever since. I'm going to be running my 23rd marathon in October here.
Wow. Congratulations on that. And that's super intense. Like, you're going to your first semester of law school and you're training for a marathon. What got into you? And hey, how did your nutrition look back then?
Yeah, so I would say that I was really focused on the running, just like I said, as an outlet, because I wanted to have something to at least try to relieve stress, because I had read so much about how lawyers are the most stressed out profession and so many of them are unhappy. And I thought, I just don't want to have that life. So I trained for and ran my first marathon during my first semester of law school. It was a challenge. Pretty much all I did was study and run, but it was a good experience for me. And at the time, I was 110% what I would refer to as a carb-fueled athlete. So I bought into the whole, you have to have pasta the night before the marathon, you have to carbo load every time running up to the race, you get done with a long run, you have to go out and have, you know, eggs and toast and hash browns and all this food on a Saturday or Sunday. And it was because that's pretty much what the people around me were doing and what was believed as far as the science at that time in the running community. Everyone knew, or everyone talked about, the fact that if you ran, you had to have a lot of carbs. And so I didn't really challenge it. As my running career continued, I just noticed over time that I had a lot of GI issues, was kind of my primary thing. And I also was, several years into it, interested in really ramping up my weightlifting. Because once I started practicing law, so I did law school 2000, 2001, 2002, and I started practicing law in 2003. And although you have a little more time as a student where you can go and run and then go to the gym and lift, I thought once I started practicing law, the game really changed. And I thought, I have to get a lot more efficient about this. I no longer have time to go run for an hour and go to the gym and lift weights, do the same thing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I just need to get more efficient. So a friend of mine told me about this gym where you could lift weights twice a week for only 30 minutes, and it was a full body workout. And I thought, okay, that's crazy. But I was desperate enough to find more time in my calendar just because of my law practice. And so I tried it, and I got to tell you, Jeffrey, it was one of those things where the first workout was one of the most intense I've ever had in my life. And then I understood, based on the trainers that work there that were telling me, they train a lot of runners who run at a really high level, and that strength training really can make your running better. And so that's what I did, is I started doing that once a week, probably for about a year, and then I ramped it up twice a week. And so, kind of to cut off my long-winded answer here, I have been running consistently and then lifting heavy pretty consistently since about 2003, 2004, 2005-ish, I'd say. I really found this gym in 2007. And all that time, I was still carb-fueled. So my diet didn't change until about 5 years ago.
And then how did you discover the ketogenic diet?
Yeah, so that was an interesting story. And that's sort of where my fall from grace happened. By the time I got to 2013, I was a partner in my law firm. I had a busy law practice. I was running a lot of marathons. I was still lifting heavy. And I was on a work trip in Williston, North Dakota, of all places, in December of 2013. And it was about 25 below zero outside at the time. We had a really, really rough winter here in Minnesota and North Dakota that year. And at the very end of our work trip, I was with one of my partners. We were going back to the airport in Williston. There was a patch of ice outside of the airport, and I fell. I tripped on this patch of ice. I fell and I broke my right leg in 10 places. Now, I knew that I broke my leg in 10 places. This is me having never broken a bone in my body my whole life, but I knew that I broke my leg bad because, number one, I heard it. It was the loudest crack that I have ever heard. Number two, I was in the most excruciating pain I had ever been in my entire life. And number three, when I was trying to look down as I was laying on the ground outside, I could tell that my knee was pointing one direction and my foot was pointing the other, which I knew was not good.
That's not good ever.
No. So they got me into the airport, emergency came. I stay in the hospital overnight. When I wake up, they have me splinted up to my hip so that my whole right leg is immobile. And I ended up having surgery about a week later back in Minneapolis, but they told me I broke my tibia and fibula in 10 places.
Wow.
Now, your tibia is the bone that really holds your lower leg together. It's that really massive bone in the front of our shins, calves. It's what holds your leg up. So I'm thinking as I come out of the surgery and think all sorts of questions, of course, I had in my mind. I thought, I've been running for this many years. I thought my bones were stronger. I've been lifting for this many years. I thought my bones are stronger. I feel healthy. I think I've been eating pretty well. I don't eat a ton of sugar, so I thought. I felt like I was a pretty healthy eater. And so what I really started to investigate was whether my body was really getting the right macronutrients that it needed and what sort of supplementation I could do on top of that to help make sure that my body was absorbing the nutrients. That research that I started to do combined sort of with what I'll call the perfect storm or perfect marriage of this chiropractor I started working with during my rehab, who was an ultra runner. And I don't know if you know this, but in the ultra running community, these guys have been keto for many years.
Yep.
So they think nothing of fueling with fat and nut butters and butters and all those kinds of things. And this was all new news to me.
Yeah, these guys run up to 100 miles for the people, the audience that doesn't really know the ultra runners. There's 100-mile races, right, that take
yes.
a few days. And I've definitely heard different podcasts with certain ultra runners on them. Yeah, and it's intense.
Well, it is intense. And, you know, I remember thinking before I ran my first marathon, okay, people that run marathons are crazy. Who in the heck wants to run even further than that? But they do, and I think it's a pretty impressive feat. So they're running, like you said, sometimes 100 miles, sometimes 50 miles. And what I learned, and I find this kind of fascinating, you know how when you hear people talk about they run a marathon and they hit the quote-unquote wall?
Oh, yeah.
And you typically hit that at mile 20. The reason that people hit a wall is because that is actually when your body runs out of carbohydrates for fuel. It's when it runs out of glycogen.
That's right.
So you go through this process in your body at that point where your body has to, for survival reasons, cross over to burning fat for fuel instead of carbohydrates, instead of glycogen. So here I had run all these marathons. I had hit that wall, and I didn't realize that's what was happening to me. But as I started to learn from this chiropractor and just do my own research, if I could switch my body over into being fat-fueled instead of carbohydrate-fueled, I could actually go a lot longer, more comfortably, and not probably have the GI distress that I had as being a carb-fueled athlete. So that started my ketogenic journey in sort of the spring of 2014.
That's awesome. Because like myself, most of the time that people get involved with this is because they find they need healing. And it's like
yes.
a healing journey. And we have to do our own research to find it. You know,
exactly.
And because this is a grassroots movement to educate everybody. And it's not a mainstream out on the commercials, you know, and on the news media, unless it's negative, it's hashtag grassroots that we find this. And myself have had ankle surgery because it was broken when I was like 16 and turned and healed incorrectly. And then after, you know, 25 years of being on that wrong structure in my ankle, it's all bone on bone. So I had them turn the bone and then reconstruct it, but I didn't have them lock it down. And then like 3 years later, it turned right back. And then the issue was, is I had this huge cyst in my calf that was leaching all this inflammation from the arthritis into my calf, and I could barely walk, you know, and I'm on my feet 10, 12 hours a day in a kitchen as a chef
yep.
and can't walk hardly, you know, and it's super big pain, and that's a big issue. And the doctors were like, well, obviously you need surgery again. But for right now, we can give you cortisol, we can give you painkillers, or I can stick a needle in there and drain the liquid. But nobody
yep.
told me why it was there for a while, and then I'd go to the acupuncturist, get it reduced, and it'd be fine for a month, and then come back. And nobody could give me any answers. So I had to do my own deep dive and find out that it was the carbohydrates that were leaching all this inflammation. And when I
yeah.
cut out the carbohydrates 12 days later, all the inflammation was gone, no pain in my calf, and I'd lost like 12 pounds.
Oh, that's amazing, Jeffrey. Isn't it incredible what the inflammation can do? I mean, you know, if I think of, God, I could probably list out a bunch of them, but if I even think of the top three things that have improved in my life since going keto, full keto, I would say I'm for sure the leanest and the fittest I've ever been, which is saying a lot because I'm, you know, a professional bodybuilder and I've run all these marathons, but it really, you can't out-train a bad diet. So it really has given me that extra edge. And number two, the reduction in the inflammation has been incredible. I, in fact, had dinner with a girlfriend who's a fitness instructor for my birthday just a couple weeks ago. And she even commented, she said, "I, you know, when I look at you, I can just tell now in your arms or in your face, you just don't have any inflammation." And it's testament to this diet, which really does get the inflammation out. And then third, and I tell everyone this because if there's one thing that I want to sell people on when it comes to keto, it's this, the mental clarity that you have and the, what I'll call just being operating on all of your cylinders has been such a benefit to me. I used to do this detox diet twice a year, sometimes four times a year for years. So I always sort of had this urging to get all of the sugar and nonsense out of my diet. But I would do this diet. It was by Anne Louise Gittleman. I loved it. I did it every year. And the eighth day of this 11-day deal had a fast day where you would just fast all day. And I remember thinking on that fast day, every time I would do it, gosh, it's amazing how good I feel fasted, where I'm prepping my body, I'm fasting, my mind feels clear. And I try to describe to people, that's sort of what I feel like all the time now. Because unlike when you're carb fueled and you have a bunch of carbohydrates at lunch and you get the afternoon slumps and now you're sitting at your desk and the last thing you want to do is focus on anything, you sort of feel like the Energizer Bunny all day long because your energy is just at a steady state and you don't have those dips and spikes in energy.
That's right. That's awesome. And speaking of the inflammation, I love the fact that we're talking about that part is I notice it in my face. I notice it in everybody's face first, but the inflammation that is really like more people should talk about is the heart inflammation, the inflammation in your gut, the inflammammation in your abdomen, you know, around your liver, these type of internal inflammation that is really chronic in so many people and that can be really reversed through this ketogenic diet and through this low carb diet for really optimal health for a long, long period of time. Because this is not, a 6-week thing. This is a long term, long game.
Yeah, I'll give you two quick examples of that. One is one of my good girlfriends. She went keto a couple months ago now as it related to just some gut health issues she was trying to resolve. And she's got a couple of kids. She's always been thin and fit. You know, she had her pregnancies a few years ago. She's lean, fit, but she always kind of struggled with, or from her perspective, complained just about her lower abdomen region. Like she didn't feel it was as flat and as fit as it should be given the rest of her body. And she went keto and that was like the first thing that she lost is all of that went away. And it really has to do with that gut microbiome inflammation stuff that finally goes away. And then the other example is I have a younger sister and she and her husband just in the last month have started to go keto just because of my experience with it. And I just saw them a few nights ago and I hadn't seen my brother-in-law for a few weeks. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, where's the rest of you? You look fantastic." And his face has leaned out and he's always gone to the gym and, you know, been pretty muscular, but he had a lot of inflammation on top of the muscle that can sometimes look as like a puffiness or a swelling. He looks incredible. And he told me, which was the most exciting part, he said, "I feel better than I've ever felt." And what I thought was most incredible, which I really want to share with people, is he said, "This is far and away the easiest quote unquote diet that I've ever done. This will be the easiest thing for me to stick to. I never see myself going off it. He feels so good."
Right on. Let me ask you this. How awesome does that make you feel to be an ambassador to this and to really understand that you're changing people's lives in such a big way? Like it's life-changing.
It is life-changing, Jeffrey, and you're so right. There is, you know, I get a lot of satisfaction out of what I do for a career in my lawyer work, and I help solve people's problems for a living. And being able to serve in this way by sharing my story and helping people understand that they can make their lives better just by empowering them to really dig in and do some self-experimentation and do their own research is some of the most rewarding work that I do. I'm so grateful to be in this spot. I really am. I feel lucky.
It's awesome. I see clients right in my home and when they come through my door and they're super excited and super energy and they can't wait to sit down and tell me the changes they made and how great they feel. You know, it just gets me so excited and knowing that I'm on the right track and I'm doing the right thing and I'm benefiting as many people as possible. Makes me feel awesome.
I love it. I love it. In fact, one thing that I'd share, and I share this because one of, I'd say, the most common questions that I get from people who are reaching out to me asking for information is, you know, like I said earlier, they just don't know where to start, but they really want to understand about sort of sample meal days and where do they start in the grocery store and how do they do meals. And I try to make sure people understand that it's really not that complicated, that when you go into the grocery store, if you can just focus on staying on the outside perimeter, so focusing on your meats, your eggs, you know, some of the low glycemic vegetables, but really your meats, your eggs, your butters, your oils, your cheeses, your avocados, those kinds of things. And then just kind of coming up with stuff on your own that's a good mix of things you may enjoy. So a lot of times for work, what I'll do on a Sunday night is I'll mix up 2 pounds of grass-fed ground beef and I'll just cook that. And then I'll portion it out in containers. And in each container, I'll put either a cup of spinach or a cup of zucchini or some kind of vegetable, because I tend to still eat vegetables, not a ton of them, but that'll be my vegetable for the day. And then I get to work and I heat that up in a bowl for 2 minutes because the ground beef was already cooked.
Right.
And then I mash up a whole avocado in it. And that is what I eat at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I can fast all morning until I get there, but that's a really simple meal. It's not that hard to do and it tastes great.
Yeah, I'm with you. Being prepared. Let's talk about that real quick, because that's huge for my clients, especially if you're still a sugar addict or eating a ton of carbs and you're just trying to get started. Being prepared is 90% of the game. You know what I mean? Yes. Even as being prepared as having some grass-fed beef sticks or an avocado in your car, or even if you have to snack still, to have that avocado or some bacon or something that you're going to be able to eat, but also having your meals planned out. How long did it take you to figure that out? That being prepared part was half the battle.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that it did take me longer than I care to admit, frankly. I mean, I've never been a person, I shouldn't say this, I was never a person until I started my bodybuilding competitions that would do all the meal prepping on Sundays and spend all this time in the kitchen. But once I did that and I realized how brainless it would make my week so I could focus on other things. You know, right. I just had all this stuff prepared and then I could just grab it each morning before I go. It just took one more decision point out of my day. So when I got ready for my first bodybuilding show in 2017, I hired a coach who put me through this meal plan ratio of things that I had to eat every day. And so I had to spend time preparing for that. And at first I was frustrated because this was a change. I mean, all of us, me included, get frustrated when there's things we have to change because we have to learn a new way of doing something. But I really encourage people to just do it and try it for a period of time. Give yourself 30 days, give yourself 3 weeks, give yourself 6 weeks and make that change. And then look back after that time period is over and you'll realize, okay, that wasn't so bad. Now I know how to make this change. Now I can incorporate this into my daily life. And it really does make things easier. So I would say if people just kind of can write this list down, when you go to the grocery store, buy a couple pounds of meat, a dozen eggs, 4 or 5 avocados, some nut butters. Make sure you have butter on hand. What else do I eat a lot of? You know, pick a vegetable that you like. If people, I always have a jar of coconut oil in my cupboard. It's really simple stuff, but it's just a matter of trying that stuff and making some recipes on a Sunday. It doesn't have to be the most complicated thing. You can really just cook a meat, mix a vegetable with it, and then bring a fat with you to work.
That's awesome. That's a great tip. I myself have to admit too that the being prepared thing is so difficult, or was so difficult for me for a long, long time, even 8 months in, because I would I worked a swing shift in a restaurant, and it's not like my restaurant is keto and grass fed, right?
Yep.
So there's enchilada sauce and green chili and tortillas and mashed potatoes and gravy and stuffing. You know what I mean? So like if I didn't really consciously on purpose pay attention to everything I was doing, I would be walking down the, you know, offline with a bowl of mashed potatoes. You know what I mean? Because I'm so unconscious, so unprepared that you just get so hungry because you're not aware of what's going on that you just shove whatever you can in your mouth. And that's
such a good point, Jeffrey, because I always tell people this too. And I didn't appreciate this until I was more adapted to the ketogenic diet. What I've been the most fascinated by, I'd say, is the fact that it really does eliminate my cravings for garbage food, I mean.
That's so right.
I'll give you an example. At my office is situated, was right outside of one of the assistants who has a bowl of chocolate candy at her desk every single day. Okay. When you put Reese's peanut butter cups in that bowl, it's like my body has a device for them that it just finds them. Those might be one of my favorite guilty pleasures. As I got fat adapted and I started eating keto and I cut out all the sugar, I legitimately mean this when I say that I can walk by that dish and not even have an emotional response to seeing a Reese's peanut butter cup. And I never used to be like that. I used to walk by and think, okay, I'll just have one. Okay, well, now I had one. Maybe I can just have two. You know, if I have two, that's only a candy bar. So really, I only had two. Well, maybe I could have three because I'm going to run tomorrow morning. Like, this is the mental gymnastics I would go through.
Of course, I get it.
And it's crazy. I'm not judging anyone else for it. I'm judging myself. I'm saying that was crazy that I was stuck in that circular thinking. And I don't know how to describe that you really can get out of that other than this keto thing really works to break your addiction to sugar. It just does.
I think it gives you the brain power, the mental clarity. And, you know, a lot of people talk about it is when you're fat full, it gives you like the willpower to not want the candy.
Yes. You know what I mean? Here's a way for people to think about it too. Cause I learned this from a nutritionist that I used to see, and this helped me understand it. Our brain responds because we have dopamine receptors in our brain. So our dopamine receptors respond to certain stimulus. So if you feed your body and then in turn your dopamine receptors get the response, sugar, alcohol, cigarettes, cocaine, anything that lights up your brain system there, your body just naturally, your dopamine receptors make you want more. Sugar is in that category of all those bad things. And so because taking it out of your system actually changes your dopamine receptors so that you don't want it and you don't crave it, you don't start that vicious cycle of addiction.
That's right. That's awesome. And I've dealt a lot with addiction in my past as well, so I really understand that concept. And I think a lot of people do, especially when it comes to food addiction, because they understand that they're food addicted.
Oh, they do. And you know what? I mean, I think all of us to some degree are food addicted. I don't think that, you know, I could go on my soapbox about big food and how frustrated I get with the state of grocery stores in today's society. But, you know, you go down a main aisle in a grocery store and the boxes and colors of things that are screaming at you that have food somewhere labeled on the package is unbelievable. I mean, 90% of the cereals that you see in the grocery store really aren't food. They're just prepackaged sugar.
That's right.
So I stopped shopping in the grocery store cereal aisle years ago because I just don't want the temptation. And I know intellectually because I've finally accepted that cereal is not food.
Right.
That's just where I'm at with it. I don't judge people for eating cereal. If you want to eat cereal, great. I know I can't have it because if I was to sit down to a bowl of Golden Grahams, I want the whole box, period. I just know that.
I get it. Last time I had cereal a year ago, I threw up.
Unbelievable. If that's not your body telling you.
The sugar, don't do it. The sugar in the cereal actually made me sick.
Unreal.
Right. So let's talk about this a little bit because it's super important about the eating fat and the eating of protein and no carbohydrates. And sooner or later, you don't have these cravings anymore. You don't want snacks and you're not eating until noon, 1, 2 o'clock, and it's not an issue. And somewhere down the line, and I'm saying this as a chef that loves to cook and loves to eat and loves to try stuff, like food just doesn't become that important to me anymore. Like it's more like fuel. And what am I putting in for fuel? And not only that, but how little of food can I put in my body and be like super active and at optimal speed and brain power?
Exactly. So I would say that the mind shift that I've had around that by realizing that the carb-fueled way that I used to live was so unnecessary, created inflammation, and really just toxified my body in a way that I didn't understand. to now be on the other side of it, to realize fasting makes me feel good. Oh my God, I can really go 14 hours without eating and I'm not hangry and want to punch everyone who walks by me. That's unbelievable. I mean, I laughed. I feel like I used to be the hangriest girl on the planet. I used to bring food through security at airports. And when security would argue with me, I'm like, you don't understand. I'm hypoglycemic. I mean, I would make up all these excuses just so I could always have my food. And now, just like you, it can be 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, oh my gosh, I probably should eat now.
Yep.
And I was never like that before. I mean, food really used to rule my life. And I'm sure that people who are listening to us, Jeffrey, who haven't kind of found this or come on the other side of it yet, if I'm in their shoes, at least, if I was listening to this, I'd be like, oh, come on, it can't be that easy.
Yeah.
And eye rolling at us. It really is, you guys. I mean that. And I wouldn't have believed it if it didn't work for me either. But I promise you that this fasting thing works, and fueling your body with fat instead of carbohydrates really does work.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It makes so much sense when you look at the science. When you look at how many thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, humans existed on this planet without Oreos, you wonder, how did they do it? Well, guess what, guys? We don't need Oreos. No judgment on Nabisco, but you know what I mean. I'm picking on one food.
Oh, perfect. It's a good food to pick on. It's amazing what I found out, and I don't do it every day, but I certainly do it at least once a week now, the point where I get busy enough and I'm not hungry enough, and I do drink my coffee, mostly black, but sometimes I'll do a Bulletproof. But just drink my coffee, and then all of a sudden it's 3 o'clock, and then I'll have a big meal, and yeah. Then I'm not hungry at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock when I go to bed. You know, if I can get to bed that early, like, I'm not hungry. And then anytime after that, it's like I'm not eating no matter how hungry I am. I'm just going to slam a bunch of water and not worry about it. And it's like, wow, I've only eaten one meal today, and I've been powering through all day long with whatever I've needed to do. And it's an amazing process. And you're right. People out there are like, no way. That's them. I can't do it. You know, I get dizzy at 1 o'clock every single day. If I don't eat something, I feel like I have to have sugar, you know, and I'm teaching people, well, you know what? Just eat a half avocado and, you know, some cream cheese or something in it, you know, and just start with that. And yep. Eventually that feeling of passing out because you're so and you're not hungry, but your just brain goes dead because it thinks it wants sugar, but it doesn't need it. You know,
yeah.
You fire and through that.
Exactly. And you've probably covered this on your show before, Jeffrey, but I do think it's worth kind of reminding people of, especially when they're transitioning out from cutting out the carbs. So when you stop fueling your body with carbohydrates, when you cut them out, like, let's say for me, my goal is I want less than 30 net carbs a day. So when, let's say you take an aggressive goal like that and you start cutting them out, one of the things that carbohydrates do in your body when you do consume them is they help your body retain water. So I always say it's really important to up your electrolytes when you're going keto. Add some Himalayan pink sea salt to your food, Celtic sea salt, whatever you want. But then add some electrolytes too, because I think that's an important component in just making the transition easier. It makes it feel, you feel a little better. And then if you really are hungry, make sure you're going to a fat or a protein source, not carbs. And slowly over time, you will realize you can go longer and longer without eating. I remember when Robert Sykes, who trained me for my one of my shows earlier this year, Keto Savage, he had me just say, okay, you know, now let's wait until 10 o'clock in the morning before you eat. And now tomorrow, let's wait until 11 o'clock in the morning before you eat. And then the next day, let's wait until noon. And it was interesting as I'd try that, how much easier it became by just gently going into it instead of all of a sudden a hard stop. I'm not going to eat tomorrow until 1 o'clock.
I mean, right.
That wasn't the way that I did it.
Yeah. And it should be a natural step. Like, it's not like you're forcing yourself not to eat till noon, 1, 2 o'clock. It's not necessary because
yes,
you're fat
exactly.
Adapted. And yeah, you could push yourself an hour. Well, okay. You know what? I'm starting to feel a little bit hungry, but is this mental hunger or is this, am I actually hungry? Let's drink, you know, it's 8 to 16 ounces of glass of water in the next hour. Let's sip it for an hour.
Yep.
And then see where I'm at after that hour. Well, I'm not really hungry. I was more thirsty. Okay, well, let's go another hour. You know, and just being present and paying attention to it.
Yeah, you're totally speaking to me because I tell everyone when they tell me, but I get hungry. So, okay, next time that happens, I want you to slam a glass of water. I want you to wait 15 minutes and see if you're still hungry. Because the research shows that more than, it's something like I don't want to quote it exactly, but I want to say it's like more than 75% of the time when you think you're hungry, your body's actually thirsty.
Yeah.
So I drink an obscene amount of water because I'm in the bodybuilding world and I tend to sweat a lot because I exercise a lot, but I weigh 130 pounds and I drink 200 ounces of water a day.
Wow,
and
that's
some
awesome.
People think that's crazy excessive, but I also have a fair amount of salt in my diet. Mm-hmm. You know, I make sure I'm not overdoing it with the water. I really listen to my body, but I sweat a ton and it really does help curb the hunger. There's no question.
Not to mention that most of America is chronically dehydrated and don't know it, because every client I talk to come through the door, how's your water intake? Oh, it's great. I drink plenty of water. And then come to find out, every one of them have signs of dehydration in one spot or another. And it's chronic, and especially I'm in Denver, Colorado, a mile up. You know, it's way chronic dehydration here. You know?
Oh, it sure is. In fact, funny story. So last year, 2017, I went out there. I stayed in Denver the night after, but I went and ran the Pikes Peak Marathon.
Awesome.
Which was amazing, but it's half. I didn't really realize until after I signed up for it that it's half marathon up a mountain and half marathon down. And I thought, what did I get myself into? But speaking of that dehydration issue, I thought I had my electrolytes dialed in. I brought exogenous ketones. I thought I had enough water, but it was a hot day. And I was about a half mile from the top. And I got a leg cramp in my calf so bad mm-hmm. that it took me down. I mean, I fell like flatlined on the ground. And a couple of the other runners had to come and start rubbing out my calf because my cramp was so bad.
Wow.
And one of the runners gave me a packet of mustard, of all things. It's got a bunch of sodium in it.
Yeah.
And so I took that and I felt better in like 5 minutes. It was amazing.
That's a cool mustard.
Funny?
That's a great story.
Uh-huh. That's tough. Out there
I try to make sure everybody's on a CalMag supplement when I'm coaching them, because most people are deficient in magnesium anyway, and potassium also. And plus, yep. It's going to, especially when you're taking it at night, in the evening, it's going to really help with those leg jitters, leg cramps, things that we get in the middle of the night, especially if we're on a ketogenic diet and we're already nutrient deficient anyway.
Yeah, I take 600 milligrams of magnesium every night and 54 milligrams of zinc.
Awesome.
So those are kind of my two primary supplements night, or my minerals.
That's great that you brought that up, because zinc is one of the most overlooked, most important nutrients, minerals in our body. And most people overlook it, especially with somebody like you or me who have joint issues.
Yep.
Right? And bone.
Here's what I also tell people about zinc. If I can get them to start it for no other reason, I say this. Zinc actually helps reduce chocolate cravings. So zinc and magnesium, if you want to stop your chocolate addiction,
magnesium,
start incorporating zinc and magnesium at night, and it does make a huge difference.
That's right.
It does.
Sex helps too, but we're sticking to the zinc and magnesium right now. So what else is your experience with zinc? How'd you learn that it was so important to you?
Yeah, so this was another functional doc. I've seen a couple functional docs over the years, and this one was, I have some docs here in Minneapolis that have had a podcast for a number of years, and so I learned about the importance of magnesium and zinc through them. And as I was kind of figuring out what my supplement ratio was, and you know, which things do I really need, which things are sort of extras, because all of this stuff costs money, and I'm mindful of that. Zinc is one of those things that I wasn't finding a lot of other sources. I was getting it in my diet at the time. Now, I'm not having oysters all the time, and that's a huge good source of zinc. There's a couple different sources of zinc in some of the nuts, like Brazil nuts, I think, that have them.
Yeah.
Maybe. So I just felt that it was one of those things that because of the chocolate cravings I was having at the time, and because I wasn't seeing it in a lot of my other sources of food, I decided to add it.
Awesome. Yeah, I also...
Why do you take it?
I also take it. I have a Biotics is a pharmaceutical grade supplement that I use and or sell. So they have some awesome high end zinc that I like to take.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yep.
Good.
So I'll be up in Minneapolis in October. I've been up there twice this year, and we'll be up there again coming up. If anybody else wants to get a hold of you that lives up there, that's going up there, and they want to maybe get some training or some coaching, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, I would love that. So I always say the best way to follow me or find me is on Instagram, because I try to keep that pretty active. And my Instagram handle is MN like Minnesota. So M as in Mike, N as in Nancy, MN Golden Girl is my handle on Instagram. And then my email matches that. It's mngoldengirl@gmail.com. And I have a website that's under construction right now, so I won't even direct people there. But between Instagram and the email, you should be able to get a hold of me.
Right on. Well,
I'd love to see you when you're in Minneapolis in October.
I'll let you know when I get up there. We're doing a nutritional therapy schooling, so we'll be
perfect.
Awesome. Yeah, going with that. So awesome. Thank you for being on the Mountain Man Nutrition Podcast.
Thank you for having me. This was a great experience, and I really enjoyed the questions. Jeffrey, and I hope we gave a lot of good info for people to get started on their ketogenic journey.
Right on. And I'll send this out probably in the next couple days, so be looking for it. And hopefully we've benefited as many people as possible, and we will continue to do so.
We will. Thanks so much for your help. I'm glad that I was able to be a part of it. I'm really impressed with what you're doing, so keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too.
Hey, this is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition again. And if you like the podcast you just heard, tell a friend. Share it on Facebook, share it on Instagram, share it on Twitter. Wherever you can share it, tell somebody who can benefit from it. Because that's why I'm here and that's why I'm doing this podcast, is to benefit as many people as possible. Millions and millions of Americans have suffered from type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, and continue to suffer. So if we can benefit them in any way, shape, or form with this podcast, I want to do that. So please share it with your friends. Get on iTunes and give me a 5-star rating if you liked it, 5 stars. And then write a little blog about it, or a little say something about it so other people can find it that you're not sharing it with. You know, the more people who listen, the more benefit we can do for others, and you can be a part of that. And I'm asking you to be part of that. So let's share this podcast as often as possible. Thank you very much, and good wishes to you.